Hi Aditya, welcome to the Big Unlock podcast. Really happy to have you as a guest today, and a very warm welcome to our listeners as well. We are on season 7 now, 190 plus episodes, so thank you. It's always really exciting to meet and get new perspectives and new thoughts from C-suite leaders. Really looking forward to our conversation today. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi. I'm the co-host of the Big Unlock podcast along with Rohit. So today we are joined by Aditya Bansod, a leader at the forefront of healthcare access, CTO of LumaTech. Aditya has spent years working with health systems, trying to move beyond AI hype and focus on what actually gets patients in the door and care delivered. His writing and thought leadership challenge a core assumption in healthcare that technology alone changes outcomes. Instead, he focuses on execution, workflow, and the unglamorous but critical last mile of care. So he's been specially vocal about AI needing to do the work and not just talk about it. So we are really excited to have this conversation, dig into where healthcare AI is truly headed and what leaders need to get right now about AI. So with that, I'll hand it over to Aditya for your introduction. Thank you, Aditya.
Sure. I think that's a better introduction than I could ever do for myself. And it makes me sound very smart, which I am not. But thanks so much for having me on the podcast. Aditya, one of the founders and CTO here at Luma. And I think kind of like the real nugget inside of what you're saying, kind of like very flattering introduction, was the unglamorous part of healthcare, right? Like what we do at Luma, the problems we aim to solve, we don't do medicine, we don't do science. Our simple job is make it easy for the patient to see their doctor. And mm-hmm. that is just like such a hard part of the healthcare experience that like there's an inordinate and infinite number of things to go solve there. And so that's kind of what we do. That's like the core of what we do. And my job here at Luma is to kind of lead the product development to help our health system partners, our clinic partners, our ambulatory group partners make that easy for their patients so that ultimately they can run better businesses and deliver better care for their patients.
Great. So thank you for that introduction. And yes, it's 2026 and we're definitely going to talk about faxes. So like you said, lots of moving parts. But to get started, Aditya, usually our listeners, you know, really like to hear an origin story. So that's what we usually start with. And like you said, you know, a lot of clinicians, doctors and other people with medical degrees come on our show. And then we ask them how they got into tech. And they always have like a really cool or interesting story, like to what led them to it. So yours is kind of the reverse, I think. You were a techie, but then you got into
That's right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that.
My path to health technology is, you're exactly right. I started from the tech universe and people mm-hmm. sometimes ask me, Ritu, like, what is your, like, what's your background? Like, and I kind of describe myself as like the very boring, generic Silicon Valley product manager type. Like, that's like me in a nutshell. I've worked at, you know, Fortune 5. I started my career at Microsoft and I went to the Fortune 100. I worked at Adobe and then I went into venture-backed startups. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I spent most of my time working on some flavor of enterprise or platform level technologies. And I kind of realized at some point in my career, what was interesting to me was actually being able to, was two things. Number one was being able to build a solution or product where what I like to call all boats rise. So you're not robbing Peter to pay Paul, right? So in healthcare, you know, you do better for your patients. It's actually better health outcomes. It's more revenue for the clinic. It's better jobs for physicians. Like you can actually make everyone's experience better. So number one was find a problem set where all boats can rise. And number two, and it's a little more personal, is like, I want to be able to explain to my family, like to my mother, like, what do I do? So if you look at my time at like Adobe, I was selling embedded systems to Korean set-top box manufacturers to make being able to play movies on their TVs possible. I get it, right? But it's like very like niche. It's very like, you know, very specific. But now like kind of I had the opportunity when I founded Luma to basically say like, hey, it's hard to go see your doctor. Like our mm-hmm. product makes that easier for you. So kind of my origin story, kind of my path into healthcare was really like number one was, can I find a problem set where I can make it better for everybody and I don't have to like steal from A to give to B? And then number two is like, can I explain what I'm doing in plain English? And, you know, we had the opportunity in 2015 to found Luma. And so me and two other founders, one's a radiologist and one is kind of CEO and leads from like kind of the business seat. And we had the opportunity to found the company together really with that simple, simple purpose, which is let's make it easy to get to see your doctor. And I think any one of us who've gone and seen the doctor at some point in the last year, it's like, you know what a challenge that can be. It's like, you may have access to MyChart, a patient, but you have so many tools available and it's still just very hard.
Yes, absolutely. No, that's a great story. And I think the common thread we hear from a lot of people is that they just wanted to, you know, make lives better and really have an impact on as many people as they could. So that's kind of the refrain, common refrain
yes.
that leads to a lot of people who work in healthcare tech. So definitely interesting hearing that from you. So let's get started on the questions. And I think my first question is, why isn't healthcare AI delivering what it's promised? And I think in your Fierce Healthcare piece, you framed the problem as execution, not ambition. And you said AI basically underperforms when it comes to real operations. So what are your thoughts about that? And how do you think healthcare CIOs or CTOs can fix that?
You know, absolutely. And I think one of the big pieces we've moved on from is AI tools as co-pilots or assistants to fully agentic kind of ways of operating with semi-autonomy. And I think the shift is actually going to be, it may be easier in other markets, but that shift is going to be exceptionally hard in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where I think we've seen some of the failings of AI solutions to this date, right? Because they operate with a very limited set of connectivity with the existing healthcare infrastructure. So if you think about like a larger healthcare system, like an IDN, like an integrated delivery network or an academic medical center, or even like a large ambulatory physician group, there's so much connectivity that has to happen when you hand off care from scheduler to MA to nurse to physician to biller to post adjudication to follow up to coming back in for care. Like the amount of connectivity and the amount of tissue inside the health system that exists to do that, it's sort of unbelievable, honestly. And the way that it works is humans are exceptionally good at passing context along. Now, I think you ask most people to say, like, no, humans are terrible at that. But I'll tell you one thing, they're better than computers at it. And so, like, if you and I are working together, like you're a nurse and, you know, maybe I'm a mid-level, like checking in a patient or like an MA, you can tell me in that handoff, you can say like, oh, and the patient's having a little bit of pain in their left leg. So can you get them a wheelchair? Right? Like when you're bringing them into the exam room, that's like just common human interactions. Healthcare systems, and especially like in the world of non-agentic without good tooling, that context really gets lost. Right. And so just give you a very particular example. You know, we see a whole world of tools out there where it's like, I'm going to use an AI agent to give you a voice call, connect to you and get you scheduled. But all the little nuances that a human would pick up in that phone call, do those make it into the chart? Do they make it into transportation assistance? Do they connect to the tooling inside the health infrastructure to maybe ask for an interpretive services that might be required for a patient who's maybe not an English or Spanish speaker? Mm-hmm. Until we can get some of that connectivity into the way that the health system operates to pass that context along, I think we're still going to see these like point effectively AI just being another point solution inside the health ecosystem.
I think that's a really valuable perspective because, you know, we're seeing a lot of traction around voice agents right now. But like what you're saying is unless those voice agents really integrate well or have some kind of additional context built in, then they'll still remain a point solution rather than being, you know.
That's right. That's right. And I think one of the things I see, like I get a chance to visit a lot of hospitals and health systems. And like I sit behind the desk with the reg staff or the scheduling staff or the MAs or whatever it is. And the one thing you see a lot is these transparent handoffs of workflows that happen in like Microsoft Teams or via like text message. Like there's all this like kind of unstructured kind of communication happening that until we really get to the point where the AI agents can kind of connect those dots too, we'll see what we're seeing, which is like, I can make an outbound dial to make someone connected for colonoscopy prep, but did I really understand that they have trouble getting into the car because they have side pain? Probably not.
Got it. Okay. So then in your recent conversations, you pointed out that healthcare still runs on cutting edge tech and clipboards. So it's like this real contrast that we see there, especially around intake and documentation, exactly what you're describing right now. So where do you think AI can make the biggest dent first? Is it ambient? Is it intelligent intake? I mean, you kind of talked about it. You mentioned that the context has to stay, but which particular piece of it do you think that's going to work? And how should leaders measure success beyond time saved? Like just saving time is not everything, like exactly what you're pointing out. If you're missing out on that context or not picking up on those nuances, and you say that you've, you know, served the patient by responding immediately with the AI voice agent, that's really not, you know, overall in the big picture scheme of things, solving anything. So what do you think, you know, should be the approach for CTOs or CIOs to crack that problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is like, if you look at, there's so much money rushing into this that I think CIOs are having a challenge right now rationalizing all the different technologies that are there. And we can get to that in a second, which is like, there's like this Cambrian explosion of like solutions. And I think ambient technology and ambient listening is sort of like maybe like the tip of the spear, right? Because it's sort of one of those things where it's like, it's not bad already. It's like actually matured to a point. And it is sort of the thing that's a perfect point solution. Right. Mm-hmm. Like the doctor can pick it up, put it on their phone, put it on their laptop, and it can be effective. Right. Like it doesn't require huge, like the medical ontology is well understood and that sort of stuff. So like, I think that's like a good early win for AI, but that's sort of in my mind, the 2023, 2024 version of the story where the question you're asking me was really around like, you know, where do we go and what should CIOs and CTOs be thinking about? I think a lot of it is really aligned to workflows. Like, what is the workflow you're trying to achieve? And I think one of the challenges that CIOs and CTOs, and I've been talking to a bunch of them, is kind of the rationalization between many systems inside, many vendors inside the health system who will provide these solutions. Just a really particular example. Let's say you're an academic system, you buy, you know, a Luma type of platform, a messaging type of platform, an intake platform, plus you've got Epic, plus you've got Blue Prism, or you've got UiPath. You've effectively purchased 8 overlapping Venn diagrams. Yes. And the question is going to ultimately be is, there's probably a right tool for the right job. There's a way that they have to talk to each other. And then there's a workflow that you're ultimately trying to achieve, which is the business outcome, right? And so if you like think about, I'll just use colonoscopies because it's like, it's always a tough one for a lot of health systems to operate. In order to get a patient in for colonoscopy, there's so much stuff that has to happen. And it's such a high value procedure that even if you show up for the appointment, but you haven't done your prep work, it's effectively a no-show, right? Yes. So you have all this stuff around here, and then you may have other documentation you need from somewhere else. So you mentioned briefly, we're going to touch on faxes and clipboards, right? You have all this stuff that you're doing to help automate the patient, but the patient is one of a handful of inputs into an event happening for the health system. You may have medical records you may need to request from a primary care provider. You may have prior authorization you may need to do. So the workflow around a colonoscopy or an endoscopy or, you know, a diabetic foot exam or whatever the procedure is, or a nuclear medicine something, you have all these like rivers like leading into the lake, which is the ultimate like health event, like the billable event. And if you're not orchestrating the workflow around that, like I have an AI faxing solution, I have an AI voice solution, I have like an AI scribing solution, you may end up having to like actually build an IT and software development shop to put that together. Most CIOs and CTOs I talk to, 99% of them don't want to build a software competency. They want to build a competency around delivering healthcare. Absolutely. But they ultimately have to build like an integration competency, which I think in the next 2 to 3 years are in this messy middle. Right. Where it's like you'll have multiple solutions that kind of have to, like CIOs are going to have to spend a bunch of time integrating and then rationalize in 2 to 3 years. Kind of final point on this is take our minds back collectively to 2020, 2021. Mm-hmm. Almost every CIO bought a telehealth platform, bought a texting platform, bought a remote patient monitoring platform because of COVID. And then by 2023, 2024, they're in the middle of a rationalization period to kind of solve out like they had like 45 apps doing 30 jobs. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see a very similar thing with healthcare, but really instead of only focus on rationalization, it'll be focused on workflows.
But if there isn't a solution out there which does everything and you're still dependent on these point solutions, then how do you get to that platform moment in healthcare AI?
I'll be the most honest here possible. I don't think that platform exists today. And so I think we are still probably 2 to 3 years of R&D and software development ahead of us as an industry, not just at Luma, as an industry to really get to a point where the connectivity allows for a real platform to emerge. And the way I say this is Epic's made some good statements around like, we're going to support like a workflow application inside of Epic, which will be like agentic. You've got other vendors that are like saying, we'll make MCPs available. Like a really good one that I saw was, I think First Data Bank, like the med database, they said, we're going to make an MCP available so that AI agents can take advantage of that. Well, that's great. Like I can plug that into Claude. I can plug it into like OpenAI, but that's standalone. How do I make that part of the overall orchestration that exists? So I think we just got like 2 to 3 years of actual like just real hardcore software development ahead of us in order to see what emerges as a real platform and then like common technology that lets us plug these pieces in with an interop angle to it.
So you think even with this plethora of AI tools out there and these advances happening like now every week instead of like literally every month, you still think it's 2 to 3 years out?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of having a rationalized answer on how to go solve a problem, I think we'll see how many, like, I mean, you see this, like, every week there's a new prior authorization AI platform, right? You see, like, literally every week, and another company have raised $65 million to go solve the problem, the same problem that's been trying to be solved for 6 years. There's just a lot of money and activity chasing a limited number of problems. Mm-hmm. And we're all patients, right? Like, that's actually one of the beautiful parts of what we do. And there's a very discrete amount of jobs to be done. So if there's, like, let's say between the moment you want care and the moment you receive care, there's 70 jobs that have to get done, right? If there's a vendor for every one of these sorts of things, no CIO is going to make this work. It's just impossible. So right now, that's kind of the direction we're heading. But very soon, maybe in the next year, you'll see one vendor that handles 10 of those problems, two vendors that handle 30 of those problems. And I think in 2 to 3 years, you'll see like 2 to 3 vendors that can handle 30 to 40 of those jobs to be done, which you'll have, like, instead of having 70 vendors solve 70 problems, you'll probably end up with 3 to 4 that solve 70 problems. And I think that's the 2 to 3 years that are ahead of us.
I see. Okay, that's a good answer. So let's change track a little bit and talk, you know, about the agentic workflows that you talked about. And you said that with MCP and with, you know, these protocols that let agents talk to each other. So we see this kind of paradox, or, you know, this dichotomy, as you, if you will, between clinicians and doctors and digital health startups we talk to, where people are saying, oh, we want human in the loop, we want, you know, peer check, and then also talk about agentic, which is the exact opposite, where the agents have autonomy and they're doing things on their own. So how do you kind of reconcile those two different viewpoints, and where do you think that's headed? And what are the trade-offs?
I use this expression to talk. So you're familiar with, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like food and, like, shelters at the bottom and self-actualizations at the top. Mm-hmm. So jokingly, I'm like, every health system has, like, their AI hierarchy that they're working on. Okay. Some are just like, I need ambience. Like, I just need to make my doctor's life easier. And others are at the very top, which is like, I'm going to let the agents have a like semi-clinical conversations with patients, right? Yeah. And every health system is sort of in a different spot on this journey. I'll find, like, high-end academic systems tend to be the very top. Rural healthcare systems tend to be at the bottom, but everyone's kind of converging. You know, they're all heading in a direction. And so I think I myself have been surprised in this hierarchy of needs, how fast people are moving up the ranks. I had this wonderful conversation with a CIO friend yesterday. They're like, yeah, we're letting the AI agents do med rec, right, with patients and, like, verifying that they're still on these medications. And I was like, already? Like, that's happening today? And it was, like, kind of one of these eye-opening moments for me. Luma has this product where we help health systems manage their incoming faxes with AI, like order management, like document discovery, like order processing. And what I thought would happen, and this is one of those areas where I think I was very wrong, was they'd want a human to verify, like, every document before every order, every referral.
Yeah.
And they're like, just give us the exceptions. We deal with this in RevCycle, which is exception-based work queues, right? Like, give us the exceptions and we'll let our humans work on the exceptions. But the stuff where you have, like, 95% confidence, like, let it ride. And so I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. I think I was a little bit, I was the gun-shy one. I was the hesitant one in how this market would evolve. Mm-hmm. Because I think what we're seeing is, it's one of those things in healthcare, and I think you saw this in 2020, which I just bring this up again because I think it's a very interesting parallel, mm-hmm. where what we experience as consumers, like you and I, like, we got DoorDash before we got telehealth, we got FaceTime before we got telehealth. You got all these, like, different things in our consumer experiences. So you're using OpenAI, you're using Claude, you're connecting your personal health records to OpenAI, right? Yes. To ask it, like, hey, tell me, like, I've had this bowel, I'm feeling bloated, like, look at my health records and tell me what it could be. I think we see this thing where it's like, you know, the consumerization of health technology before the health systems adopting it. That's shrinking, right? The amount of time between those things is shrinking because the consumers are demanding it, because patients are consumers, consumers are patients. So I think just to kind of very precisely, I'm being long-winded, but to very precisely answer, like, talk to the question, I think health systems are moving towards autonomy faster than I would have thought.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the trend. And like you said, I think it's part of it is normalization as well. When we get to used to, you know, like OpenAI talking to us about health, or like you said, consumers are just becoming more comfortable with that idea and they're open to sharing and it's not such a big deal anymore. That's actually pretty interesting. So then within Luma, how do you set up these guardrails or audit trails or, you know, escalation logic? Do you have, like, governance committees, or, like, how does this thing work? Like, who decides how much of the sharing is okay or how much of it is going to be, like, human checked or not?
I like to think of it from two sides. Number one is, like, kind of the governance and audit side. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I've seen that I've been very pleasantly surprised is both ISO, like the International Standards Organization, and HITRUST have actually, like, started to get new policies and new compliance programs into place. So ISO 42001, HITRUST R2AI, like we've seen like a good effort from like the compliance and regulatory, like not regulatory, but like, you know, the standards bodies. And yes. So like Luma, because you asked specifically to us, we're working on kind of those sort of regulatory and compliance programs. That's one slice, right? Like making sure you follow best practices and have an auditor say your like stamp seal of approval. The other is you have to build the product to meet this health system where they are on this hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. So if the health system is like, we haven't even deployed ambience tools yet. Okay, like you're still at your first step. You're still looking for food. You're still looking for shelter. Mm-hmm. And some health systems are like, hey, I want to completely reallocate my 8,500 plus call center team to only work these things. I need you to work the rest of them and answer any question a patient might ask. Okay, so you're at the top of it, like you're looking for self-actualization, self-realization. And so I think you have to build the software once you have the compliance pieces in place to allow different health systems to be a different part of their own journey. Everyone will kind of end up in the same place in 5 to 6 years, right? Or pick a number. But they're not going to all, some will run, some will sprint, some will jog. And as long as you build the software to accommodate their own path on that journey, I think you'll be in a good place. Just a really particular example using our fax product. We can turn up the knob. We can turn the dial up to 100% automation. Or we can say like, hey, if the confidence scores that we get are above 80% or below 80%, have a human look. And some health systems are like, 90% is okay. Some health systems are like, 70% is okay. And we'll deal with some errors on the other side. So it really depends where they are. And if you have the tooling to kind of support that journey they're on, I think you allow for that different levels of AI maturity in health systems to be expressed in their workflows.
Okay, great. So you were saying give the control back to, you know, the clients or the health systems and let them decide how much of the autonomy or human at the loop they want.
Our vantage point is we have an opinion, right? Mm-hmm. We're not short of any opinions over here. And so, you know, we have standards.
But that's what I was interested in. That's what I want to know. What's Luma's opinion or what's your opinion?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So we say like, hey, if the AI basically thinks it's 90% right, mm-hmm. you know, and we have like LLM as the judge, right? Yeah. So one LLM runs the process, another LLM judges the output. If the answer is over 90%, we generally say fully automate anything above 90%. If it's below 90%, that's our best practice. Now, some health systems are like, I want 70%. We're like, great, we'll turn the knob down. And when you feel comfortable, then next month we'll turn to 75, then we'll turn to 80, then we'll turn to 85, and we'll get it to 90. I think we're probably a couple months away, maybe 6 to 8 months away from getting to 95%, you know, where we want that to be. But like our baseline is like, hey, if we're 90% sure, let it ride. Don't even require a human to verify.
Okay, great. That's good to hear. That's optimistic.
I build software. My job is to be optimistic.
Yeah. So Aditya, as usual, time's flown by. So we would love to hear some, you know, closing thoughts or comments from you. And especially, I think the listeners love to hear about, you know, what your thoughts are for the future. Like if you had a crystal ball or maybe, you know, 6 months or a year, where do you think you're going to be? And with AI especially, where is this all heading? And we always get like conflicting answers between the very optimistic folks and the, you know, catastrophic thinkers, like I said. Yeah. And one of my last guests called it bimodal thinking, but he said yes, be somewhere in the middle. So what's your take on that?
I like that expression, bimodal thinking. Sometimes I like to say both can be true at the same time. I think just overall, we're like, I run, you know, in our organization, a very large software development team. And I think like just the very nature of what software development is and product development is it's a radically different field in the last 3 months. And the nature of the job is just going to be very, very different. So that's one set of thinking, which is like, I'm a little worried about like, what is my profession look like in 5 to 6 years, maybe in 2 to 3 months.
What does your team look like? Yeah,
exactly. On the other side, as where I see this going is, I think the ability to help patients get things done has never been better. It's literally never been better because you can actually have a dialogue with an AI agent that lets you talk at 2 a.m. when you have that stomach pain to get scheduled for an urgent care visit at 9:00. Right? Like that, we've never had that ability. We had online scheduling, we've had wait lists, we've had FastPath, we've had all these things. But just being able to actually engage patients in the way that lets you operationalize AI, I think it's up and to the right. I think it's just like completely, we're in for a new frontier in how this sort of stuff happens. And honestly, I think the set of solutions that we're all bringing to the market today, if we look at them 18 months from now, we're going to look at everything we built in Q1 or H1 of 26 as naive. So like, I think we're going to see this like just complete different way of actually making it easy for patients to see their doctor. And I think that's just like, it's very exciting. I worry about software development on one side. I'm just super excited about what it means for Luma and for healthcare in general on the other side.
Yeah, I think the pace has really accelerated, especially in the last 6 months.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially with Claude and, you know, co-work and everything. It's
100%.
Kind of reaching science fiction levels, right? So, with you know, Molt and the agentic community. So interesting.
100%.
So thank you so much, Aditya. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, and thank you for a great conversation.
I really appreciate it. Looking forward to the next one.